You know, 10 months ago, we made a decision to redefine our direction. We knew there would be ups and downs this season. We knew that we would encounter some things that were going to be difficult, and we did. With that said, I think we're in a better place today than we were at this time last year. And I think we have an opportunity to grow as an organization starting today.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
Levine, he goes right. Oh!
Stop it, Sampson! Did you not get the memo?
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
Here's Enes Kanter, what are you doing? The finisher in New York City.
Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
We're going to preach patience. Doesn't mean we're not going to be looking for ways to get better, but a lot of it's going to come internally. We need Zach LaVine to be a better basketball player. Chris Dunn to come back a better player. Lauri Markkanen, Bobby Portis, you go down the line. They have to put in the time and confident that they will.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Like I said at the beginning, I feel better today about our direction and our position than I did a year ago.
Locked On Bulls. Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern at 9 a.m. Central Time. That's tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at LockedOnBulls.com and college hoops over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at LockedOnBulls.com and host of the 312 show on AM 1590 WCGO in Chicago. Follow us on social media on Twitter at LockedOnBulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls underscore Peck. Like us on Facebook, Facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. And subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure you're following the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. Our text and voicemail lines at 331-979-1369. Hit us up with your voicemails, your text messages, your questions, your reaction. We want to hear from you. 331-979-1369 is the line to text and call. We do mailbag every single Wednesday. We're going to do a couple voicemails throughout the week like we've been doing the last few weeks, a couple episodes here and there if we've got some surplus voicemails. So for sure, leave those voicemails for us. Once again, 331-979-1369. Welcome back, Matt. It's nice to be back here now a full week into August. We're really in the NBA dead period at this point now until training camp starts up. But still, even with that, a lot of Bulls talk, a lot of people wondering what's going to happen with this Bulls team and how it's going to look and how it's going to shape. But how was your weekend? How you doing?
It's good. What's up, Jordan? What's up, Bulls Nation? Hope everybody had a great weekend. Hope everybody that went to Lala had a good time, stayed safe, didn't do anything too stupid. I successfully avoided Lala all weekend, as I said I would. I had a nice relaxing Sunday. Went to Montrose Beach with some buddies yesterday. Nothing better than Lake Michigan with a cooler full of beers in Chicago, man. I mean, we got to soak it up. Summer's going to be over before we know it. Here we are, like Bears have another preseason football game later this week. August is going to fly by just as fast as July did.
That's for sure. And those days counting down, too, we're going to soon be out of... I know we got like the terrible humidity, and you got that this weekend. It was like 90-plus humidity this weekend. But, yeah, not too many of those days left. And once we get into September and October, then that's when we got to prep ourselves for the winter once again. And so, yeah, take advantage of those days while we have it. So on today's episode, we're ready to chalk up. Not only did the Vegas release their over-under win totals for this year for the entire NBA, but Bleacher Report released their power rankings of front offices, and I think two interesting topics Matt and I both want to dive into as far as the Bulls are related and some of the other teams that are kind of in the rebuild mode, where the Bulls kind of sit in terms of those teams as well as we're going to take a couple voicemails at the end of the show. So let's start here. Let's start with the Las Vegas odds. So for 2018-2019, the NBA's odds for Vegas were released, And I was actually kind of surprised by this, and I think maybe some Chicago Bulls fans out there will be surprised too. So Vegas's odds have the Bulls as the third worst record in the NBA. Their win total, 27.5. The only teams worse than them is Sacramento at 25.5 and Atlanta at 23.5. Is it surprising to you, Matt, at all, first reaction when you saw this and some of the other win totals for these teams around the league, that the Bulls ended up, even with all of the additions, bringing Zach LaVine back, bringing in Jabari Parker, having Lauri Markkanen back for a full season, all of these moves that the Bulls made still put them at the third worst odds in the NBA as far as win total goes?
Yeah, I mean, a little surprised, and it's also worth mentioning that it wasn't just Westgate in Vegas that had him at 27.5, which is just a half game above what they finished last season, but also ESPN's panel of quote-unquote experts had theirs released sometime late last week. I'm pretty sure I put it up on Twitter, on my Twitter account, where they were doing over-under for win totals and where teams were projected to finish in Eastern and Western Conference rankings, and it was very similar to those Westgate Vegas odds. Bulls, I think, were at 28, so one more win than last season, and similarly, just like those Vegas odds, only Atlanta, Sacramento, and I think Phoenix squeaked in underneath them as the third team that the ESPN experts projected to be worse than, I should say, the Bulls this upcoming season. So, yeah, I mean, I'm surprised. I'm surprised because as much as you and I have voiced our skepticism about how these young pieces might fit, you think back to how many games Chris Dunn missed last year. You think back to how many games Zach LaVine missed last year. Even Lauri Markkanen missed 14 or 15, whatever it was. And even if you take away that weird win streak that was mostly led by Nico Mirotic, who is now gone, I think you and I are thinking that 27-28's kind of low. We were thinking, even if things don't go swimmingly with this young core in the second year of the rebuild, they could probably manage to crack at least 30 wins. That's where I am. I think that's where you are too, right?
This has to play into the factor that the Bulls have two guys that are coming back from ACL injuries, right? Like, this to me says that Vegas might not be as sold as maybe some Bulls fans are on paper of what the Bulls have and if they can stay healthy or not. Like, that was the big question last year. Like, I know Chris Dunn had some weird, odd injuries last year that kept him off the floor, and he only played like 52, 55 games last season. So I think Vegas might be looking at this team and saying, well, I think one of their biggest battles is just being able to stay healthy, like the entire team staying healthy. And that's going to be a battle for not only Zach LaVine this season, just to be able to play, you know, 75 to 80 games this season. And same thing with Jabari Parker. Like, you know how we talked about Derrick Rose in his final season is like, what's the over under total of how many games he's actually going to play coming back from the ACL? And 60 was like around that point that we thought. And that's what I'm worrying about Jabari Parker too. Can the knees hold up for an entire season? Can he play more than 60 games this year? Is he going to have to rest for, you know, a quarter of this season? And I think that's where I think the Las Vegas odds kind of have them up in the air. It's funny though too, you go back to last year's odds, pretty sure the Bulls win total was at like 21.5 from Westgate and Vegas. Obviously they blew that apart with 27 wins last season. So I always take it with a grain of salt too, but Vegas is usually pretty close as far as win totals go, and they know more than I think the average fan does know. So I'm curious. I am very surprised, though. They had a couple teams ahead of the Bulls that I could raise my eyebrow at, and Cleveland being one of them, the Clippers being another team, Memphis Grizzlies, they had them actually like 6.5 wins better than the Bulls this season. I know they have Marcus Gasol.
I buy that.
Really? With Jaren Jackson as a rookie, Marcus Gasol coming back, Mike Conley being back.
If Conley, assuming Conley's healthy and assuming Gasol is healthy and assuming that Jaren Jackson is as good as we all think he's going to be, yeah, I absolutely buy Memphis being ahead of the Bulls next season.
And they just got the guy from the Spurs too. They signed him to what, three or four year deal? They just signed Kyle Anderson, which I don't know if he's going to have a starting spot. I would assume he's got a starting spot on Memphis this year. But a couple of those ads too, like you were talking about with bringing back some of your veteran players, you know, former All-Stars, that team could be pretty damn interesting this year. I'm interested if they can pull that all together and can, like we said, like I think health is a big problem for the Grizzlies as well. So can those guys come back and play at a high level? I guess I'm curious what Bulls fans think as far as 27 and a half wins for this Bulls team this year. Where are you sitting? If you're going over or under or right around 27 and a half wins, what are you still sticking with? Like we talked about maybe last week or 2 weeks ago, we were throwing out win totals that we thought this team would have. I think I said around 30 to 35 wins this year, and you were around like 32 to 37 wins. That's still, you feel still feel comfortable sitting around that win total?
Yeah, I do. And I'm going to say that somewhere in the low to mid 30s is what I am expecting. And that is assuming mostly a healthy season across the board, and maybe you toss in one player that goes down for a portion of the season with some kind of injury. And as you were just highlighting, a lot of that might have to, a lot of these Vegas odds might have to do with the fact that so much of this young Bulls core is young, yes, but last season and previous seasons have all sorts of injuries on their resume. When you talk about Dunn's season last year and Parker and LaVine, and that maybe people are banking on one of those guys going down this year. Maybe that's why the win total is projected win total is so low. But the other factor that Bulls fans have to face, and maybe they don't want to, especially if they do actually want the Bulls to be competitive this season, as opposed to some who I think still believe that the Bulls would be best served being back in the lottery. I think I still count myself in that camp, is that regardless of whether or not people are putting injury risk and injury risk calculations into these win projections, a lot of people and people in Vegas and people at ESPN are just really not buying into how good this young core is. Young, yes, but how good can they be and how well can they fit and play together? And I'm sorry, just I know that the East got quote unquote weaker because LeBron left Cleveland and is now playing out West, but that's one guy leaving one team. And yeah, maybe the Bulls don't get swept in the regular season series by Cleveland this year as they did last year, but I didn't see a whole lot of Eastern Conference teams getting weaker this offseason. And it's a debate whether the Bulls actually got better, because we haven't seen what it looks like with the addition of Jabari yet. We haven't seen a full healthy season from LaVine. We don't know yet what Hutchison and Wendell, the two rookies, are going to contribute. It's fair to be skeptical, and between that and no like obvious other Eastern Conference teams getting worse outside of Cleveland, I'm surprised that it's as low as 27, but I'm not surprised that the Bulls are ranked as one of the worst teams in the Eastern Conference.
Couple other surprises, and I think one thing to touch on up this Bulls team too is the fact that Chris Dunn, Lauri Markkanen, and Zach LaVine only played 12 games together last season. I think I go back to that multiple times because, like you said, it's kind of unknown. Like, we don't even know as Bulls fans how those three can play together and what it looks like at a high level for all three of them to be healthy. I know we got to see Zach LaVine, Lauri Markkanen, and Chris Dunn like right at the middle of the season around like the 40, 50, 60 game marker. But you also talk about the rookie wall that Lauri Markkanen was facing. You talk about Chris Dunn kind of being in and out of the lineup. It was weird. That was a weird situation. Like, Lauri Markkanen missed like a week and a half, 2 weeks because he was having a baby, and then Chris Dunn smashed his face in the United Center floor. So a lot of that to me is like, those 12 games, yeah, they're there and it's small sample size, but still for the relatively the majority of the season, still a very big unknown. And then you're adding another piece, like you said, in Parker, that can be another unknown. So I think on paper, this Bulls team looks really good. Like, we've been talking about that before, but can it translate to the floor? And right now, I don't think Vegas is buying into it necessarily. I want to shoot a couple other teams before we take a break here at you, and you tell me over or under for these teams. And I was very surprised by Vegas. One of them being the New York Knicks, 29 and a half wins, over or under this season.
If Kristaps comes, oh man, see, like, I have such, people are talking about Kristaps missing a significant chunk and not being ready to go because he's still recovering from that. I might go under for the Knicks on that.
Yeah, and you've got to see if Kevin Knox is really the real deal in the NBA. Can he do the things he was doing in summer league? He looks, as advertised, as a great wing player, but yeah. Can he do that?
That might be the one team on those projections that I think is undeservedly ahead of the Bulls.
How about another one?
Just because, especially if Kristaps is not himself.
How about another one here? Orlando, 31.5 wins. Where are they coming up with 31.5 wins for Orlando?
That's a good... I don't know. I guess Mo Bamba is worth a handful of wins. I don't know, man.
Are they expecting Aaron Gordon to like have an all-star season this year and now win his
fourth
year?
Maybe that's what they're finally projecting, a breakout year from Aaron Gordon. And, you know, and they have Jonathan Isaac in their front court as well. And, you know, and like they let, you know, what was their biggest loss this offseason? They let Elfrid Payton go, but I was never a big fan of his. Like, I don't think he's a big game changer.
See, that's where I get stuck, too.
I'd say like, what, like, I tell you what, though, if Aaron Gordon has a season that is finally an all-star caliber season, I can see that. I can see that.
So you pair him next to, like you said, if Mo Bamba has a pretty solid rookie year, that could probably get you to 31.5, maybe. I don't know. I'm still not sold. You don't have any guards there, and like they plan on using Jerian Grant as their starting point guard next year. Like, I don't know if I'm buying that to be able to run an offense. Like you said, though, if Aaron Gordon has an all-star season, that probably does get to them to at least 30 wins. So that was a team. Phoenix came in just to win over the Bulls in the projections, 28.5. I might hit the over on that one, but it'll depend on the rookies and seeing whether or not those guys can come out. DeAndre Ayton, Josh Jackson, can he have another? Can he turn it on, turn it to the next level?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'd take the over on that pretty comfortably. I know people are expecting the Suns to be bad again this season. And, you know, obviously in the Western Conference, they're certainly not going to be a 500 basketball team unless they shock everybody. But I would still take the over on that just because Devin Booker is one of the best young scorers in this game right now, and I think Josh Jackson's going to have a nice big uptick in his game in his second season, and DeAndre Ayton is ready to be a contributor. Whereas, you know, we were just talking about the Magic and Mo Bamba, and Mo Bamba was a name that Bulls fans kept talking about, and he almost slid to us at 7, and he might have a higher ceiling than Wendell Carter Jr. is kind of what we were hearing. But I don't know if he's going to be NBA ready right off the bat. Whereas I think DeAndre Ayton will be more so. So yeah, when it comes to that young Suns core, I believe in them tacking on closer to 30 wins.
Just a few more teams. Just give me a quick over and under for these. Charlotte, 35.5 games.
I'll take the over.
I'm gonna go under on that team. Brooklyn, 32.5.
I really like the moves that Brooklyn's made in the last couple of years. They've totally steered themselves out of that awful situation dating back to that trade with Boston. Like, they've made some nice moves. What was the number for them?
32.5.
I'm going to go slightly over.
Yeah, I'm going to hit the over on that one as well. D'Angelo Russell, I think, is set to have a really, really, really good year this year. I think we're going to see a breakout in his numbers this year. And like you said, I think combine that with the fact that they've made some really nice moves for guys that maybe are sort of role players or guys that maybe they feel like have more of a high ceiling. I think that Brooklyn team is going to be better than we anticipate. And then if you've got a guy like most improved...
The better of the two teams in New York? You think the Nets are going to have a better record than the Knicks?
Ooh, yeah, I think so. I think this year, I can bank on Kristaps Porzingis coming back and being fully healthy and dominating the way he does. Like, we were talking about Boogie and the Achilles injury. Like, have we really seen like a 7'2", 7'3" guy really tear his ACL and come back and just be dominant again? I don't think we've really seen that as far as modern NBA goes. So I have some question marks as whether or not Kristaps Porzingis can come back. And it's fair to have those skepticisms, just like we do about Jabari Parker and Zach LaVine and those guys that had high ceilings. Two other teams real quick here. Dallas, 34.5 wins.
I don't know if I'm buying Dallas that quickly. Then at the same time, like, they could get a rookie of the year kind of season from Luka Doncic and some of the other pieces on that core. I don't really know how much you're getting from Dirk anymore, but Dennis Smith Jr. certainly looked to be one of the more exciting rookies this past season.
They added DeAndre Jordan, and they still have Harrison Barnes.
Added DeAndre, have Barnes. You know, 34... It's the Western Conference, man. No, I think I'm going to go under.
That's true. I know. Maybe they hit it slightly at 35 wins, but that would just be a little bit. I think Dennis Smith Jr. has to have a really good year this year, and then you've got to have almost a rookie of the year type of year from Luka Doncic if that's the type of win total you're going for. If they're even trying to get like an eighth seed, and that's going to take at least 40 wins in the West, and I don't even know if that's enough to get you in a position to battle for that eighth seed. So yeah, I think that Western Conference is really tough, and that might knock down their win total. One last team that I was very, very surprised by, and that's the Miami Heat. They have them at 41.5 wins. Are you going over or under on the Miami Heat this year?
In a weak Eastern Conference, I'll take the over on that.
Hmm.
I don't care who's playing. Eric Spoelstra can get that team to 40 wins in a weak Eastern Conference.
I can see that. And maybe that we get some surprises by guys like Bam Adebayo, and maybe you get a breakout season in Justice Winslow. I don't know. We'll have to see. But yeah, these odds are very interesting. And I think if you're somebody who's confident in this Bulls team this year, and you feel like everybody can stay healthy and they're going to be one of those dark horse types of teams, I would say put some money on that 27.5 win total. If you feel like this is a pressure year for Fred Hoiberg and a lot of these guys that are going to be in the starting rotation, man, I would hit the over on that if that's how you confidently feel as a Bulls fan for some of these teams. Because like we were talking about, those win totals for some of the other Eastern teams, I think all it takes is one injury for all of those teams to all of a sudden be hitting the under on some of those win totals. So I think with an open East, we still have a lot of unknowns on this Bulls team, I think that's where if you feel confident enough, I would hit the over on the 27.5 wins.
Yeah, I mean, I think you and I were in agreement here that if it's 27.5, you should logically take the over, because to not hit that would mean that the Bulls essentially took a backward step in year two of the rebuild, which would not be good considering all of the games that were missed by key players last season. But it's just a nice reminder to those Bulls fans who are wildly optimistic about this young core and are saying, oh man, this Bulls team's making the playoffs as a middle seed somewhere in the East and they're going to win 40 plus games. Look at the logic that other people are using to say, now we're capping this at 27, or we're putting this at 27.5. There's a big gap. So you and I are both somewhere in the 30s. Those Bulls fans who think this is a 40-plus win team, you are thinking very optimistic.
We got to take a short break here on Locked On Bulls. When we come back, we're talking about an article that was written by Bleacher Report ranking the NBA's front offices, and I want to see if not only Matt agrees about where the Bulls are slotted here, but also Bulls fans, hit us up too. What do you think about these odds for the Bulls over under 27.5 wins Vegas has them at right now? We'd love to hear your reaction. Hit us up on social media on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, or hit our text and voicemail line at 331-979-1369. Text and voicemails there. Stay right here with us at Locked On Bulls. Be back in 60 seconds. Back here on Locked On Bulls, once again, you can hit us up. Text and voicemails at 331-979-1369. Hit us up on social media as well, at Locked On Bulls. Go give us a follow there. Subscribe to the show, too. Make sure you're subscribed. Leave us a review if you'd like to. We'd love that from you if you're an iTunes subscriber. 5-star review, that would be fantastic. The more reviews we get, the bigger our audience gets, so we'd appreciate that. But hit us up with your text and voicemails, too. 331-979-1369. All right, so Matt, we were going through this Bleacher Report updated NBA front office projections and where some of these front offices sit as far as the worst front office right now in the NBA to the very best front office. And while it is Bleacher Report and there are a million other opinions out there, this kind of lines it up, and I want to see if your idea of where the Bulls should sit is in line with what Bleacher Report had written. So out of the 30 NBA teams, the front office where the Bulls sit right now, 24th. So that's six teams are behind the Bulls as far as their ranking goes. Immediate reaction, do you feel like the Bulls are adequately ranked here as far as 24th in the league with a few teams scattered behind them?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm pretty much in agreement with where they have this Bulls front office ranked, because you look at some of the teams ranked behind them. At 25, it's the New York Knicks. That we were just talking on an episode last week about how that team, you know, outside of making a strong pick with Kristaps Porzingis, who maybe you could have considered a risky pick at the time and a pick that Knicks fans didn't like, you know, that pick worked out. But other than that, this team has just been languishing in hell. Like, not even purgatory where they're decent. They've just been a bad basketball team for a long time now. So, since even before Melo left, and Melo was all that team had, and Melo was already declining. Pistons at 26. I still am really curious about that Blake Griffin trade. I don't know if Stan Van has what it takes to be the guy to get the Pistons back to relevance. Cleveland at 27. Obviously, the decision to move on from David Griffin was a big risk, and one that LeBron James did not like, and one of the many reasons why LeBron James is now gone. Signing Kevin Love at his age to that $120 million extension to be the new guy in Cleveland is very risky. So I can understand them ranking behind the Bulls. Charlotte, that's a team that's just languishing in mediocrity. They made the mistake to swing on Dwight Howard, and that never works out for anybody. Kemba Walker can't do anything by himself. Memphis at 29, that Chandler Parsons contract looks awful still. They have an aging Gasol and an aging Conley that are on big deals. And then obviously, hey, guess who's at 30th? The team that we joke about being undeniably the worst front office when it comes to talking about the Bulls front office, and that is the Sacramento Kings, who could have had Luka Doncic at 2 and passed. And that is one of many curious things they did, including offering a big contract to Zach LaVine this offseason. Thanks a lot, you jerks.
They took that money, too, and turned it around, and instead of getting a guy like Zach LaVine or Jabari Parker, they turned it around and spent the money on a guy that was going to go back to Europe and play in Bialica. And then you signed Yogi Ferrell 2 to 3 years, like $6.5 million guaranteed. So they took that money and ended up signing two guys that are kind of fringe rotation players. So I don't know if those moves are going to work out for the Kings or not. You're right, though. They tried to hit them. They took Marvin Bagley over Doncic. So obviously the Kings for me are the worst ones in the NBA. It's funny that you look at this ranking and, you know, as much as the Bulls and the Kings have been connected over the last few years as far as moves are made, guys that they both similarly like, and these teams kind of being similar in some ways you can connect dots with, but the Kings are without a doubt the worst front office in the NBA right now. I'm very surprised, though, at the Grizzlies because of what we were just talking about, the NBA odds and the win totals, and I don't know if that's recency bias or it's just because the Chandler Parsons deal ended up being so awful that you look at that. I don't know if that's why they did that, or Tyreek Evans walking for nothing and then not being able to trade him, letting David Fizdale leave as your head coach just because he had issues with Marc Gasol, or Marc Gasol had issues with him.
That was a bad look, because Fizdale was considered at the time to be one of the best coaches in the league and did pretty wonderful things with that Memphis team just a year before.
So you look at that, and then you've got a couple teams like you were mentioning, the Hornets, who just replaced their GM in April with Mitch Kupchak, former Los Angeles Lakers GM. So you look at that. Small sample size there, but we kind of know what Mitch Kupchak likes. He likes his Big Ten prospects, and they ended up going with Miles Bridges from Michigan State. So I don't know what he's going to be able to do with that team, but he did get rid of Dwight Howard, and so maybe they'll be a little bit interesting. But they got a fresh face in there, so it's not that big of a sample size for them. I guess I'm sitting here confused about why Cleveland is ranked the third worst franchise as far as front office goes. Like, I get that they let LeBron walk and they traded Kyrie for basically nothing last year. Yeah, they got a pick out of it, but still, you traded Kyrie in his prime, one of the best point guards arguably in the league, and you basically got nothing for him. So I don't know. And like you said, with the Kevin Love contract, it was either trade him or keep him around and keep this team sort of relevant. So interesting move. I don't know if I would put them as third worst. I think the Pistons would probably be worse on that. You talk about Pistons fans who were skeptical about the Blake Griffin trade and using Blake Griffin and now Andre Drummond as your two main pieces. Can they figure something out for that? And then you look at like drafting Luke Kennard over Donovan Mitchell to that blunder that they made there. So I don't know. I would have some question marks there, but as far as the Knicks go, being 25th, that kind of makes sense, but that's kind of recency bias as well because Phil Jackson kind of torched that entire front office and the way that that team was going. So I don't know if I can...
And we also didn't mention the Joakim Noah contract, which I know is sad and a sore subject for us Bulls fans who still think on Joe very fondly, but that's an awful contract. Just awful.
So that puts us back to 24 where the Bulls are. And I think, rightfully so, I think that they're ranked, you know, right at like the middle 20s. I would still say the Bulls front office for a lot of the moves that they made over 2 years. And maybe it's just the remnants of 2016-2017 season is still kind of lingering in the air as far as where this is going. Maybe you could throw in the fact that, too, that they didn't get a top five pick when they were trying to lose. You traded away, or you basically sold away a second round pick in the middle of a rebuild. Little things like that, I think, have question marks as far as the Bulls front office go. Bleacher Report cites the signing of Jabari Parker as well as one of those kind of unknown, questionable moves, too.
It's fair, but I mean, you were saying just now you can't believe that the Cavs are ranked, 27th, three spots behind the Bulls. For all the Bulls fans complaining still about the Jimmy Butler trade, we talked about that last week, you mentioned the Kyrie trade. How did that work out for the Cavs? Not so hot. I mean, to me, it's fair to give the Bulls front office a little bit of credit, but to say largely still that they have to prove themselves to be better, and that's why they are kind of in the mid-20s here, because I think if it were not for the Jimmy Butler trade, which needed to be done, and the return still kind of up in the air, but as far as adding three young assets, it could have been much worse, and then making the right pick with Markkanen last year and making what looks like a pretty solid pick with Wendell this year, I feel like that earned them some points and put them at 24 as opposed to, say, 29th right in front of Sacramento.
I think the only team... Actually, I could say there's two teams. The two teams that I feel like are ranked ahead of the Bulls front office, as far as if we're just going recently, like, over the last 2 years, a team that I think is by far ranked way higher than that they should be is actually a playoff team in the East, and that's the Washington Wizards. Like, how can the Wizards be ranked 18th overall when you literally just went out and signed a locker room cancer in Dwight Howard, a 45% healthy Jeff Green, to a team that's looked like they were a complete disaster last year, just getting absolutely destroyed in the playoffs, and you had guys quitting on each other. You had a weird situation in John Wall last year coming into camp out of shape. Things weren't going right. Like, and I even go back to like the pitch before Kevin Durant went to the Golden State Warriors and how they were trying to build up themselves so they could maybe get a return home. Then they couldn't even get him to show up for a meeting in his hometown for the Washington Wizards. So to me, I feel like the Wizards are ranked way higher than they should be as far as the front office goes. You've got two stars in Bradley Beal and John Wall, and you can't figure out a team to put around those guys to get past a second-round exit. Like, to me, I think that's a disappointment as far as the Wizards go. So I would look at them, and the Orlando Magic, too, were ahead of the Bulls just by one slot at 23. I don't know what the Wizards are deciding to do, or the Orlando Magic are deciding to do there. Like, I know that they re-signed Aaron Gordon to his contract. They decided to go with Mo Bamba, but still, they did get Bismack Biyombo off their books, but still, that signing was terrible. They don't have any guards going forward. You signed Evan Fournier, who is not the player that they thought he was going to be, to that contract. You got rid of Mario Hezonja. You traded away Victor Oladipo. You got rid of all these picks in the first round and these lottery guys that the Magic were building up. They traded a lot of them away before they ended up turning out to be pretty decent, solid players, and then you stuck with the guy that ended up doesn't even look like should be in the league in Elfrid Payton. So a lot of questionable moves from the Orlando Magic. So that's where I just get kind of confused, is why they're one step ahead of this Bulls team, and maybe it's just because of the moves that they made this offseason.
Yeah, I mean, maybe they're getting a little bit of credit for that, and I mean, one spot ahead of the Bulls, you're splitting hairs, but Orlando didn't sign Dwayne Wade and Rajon Rondo, so there you go. Maybe they get a little bit of credit for not doing that. And with Washington, I agree with you. That organization, for all of the, I think, you know, I read in this Bleacher Report column, they've made the playoffs 8 times in the last 15 years when they've had the same GM in charge of player personnel. Okay, so you're batting over 500 on making the playoffs in a weak Eastern Conference. How many times has have the Wizards gone to even an Eastern Conference Finals in those years? Because I think the answer is zero. And John Wall has been running his mouth, and there were all of those locker room issues, and you add Dwight Howard to that. I'm sorry, even though LeBron's gone and the East is quote unquote, you know, wide open at least to fight for a top 4 seed, I don't know what that Washington front office is doing. And 18, I could see them rightfully being ranked behind the Bulls if you wanted to be real about it.
Yeah, I think the only other team too that I'm a little bit surprised is the Milwaukee Bucks. They're ranked 15th on Bleacher Report's list here. I think I just have some question marks as why didn't they get rid of Jabari Parker, and why didn't they get something for him last year as far as a trade goes? If you're going to let him hit free agency and all of a sudden, you know, your number 2 overall pick, a guy that you fought with over 2 ACL injuries, all of a sudden you just let him walk for nothing. Some Bucks fans were super pissed off about that, so I could see that. You signed a guy in Ersan Ilyasova to 3 years, $21 million. Like, that's a weird signing. You brought in Jason Kidd, and then that didn't really work out. You fired him because he was having fights with guys like Parker, and then you hired Mike Budenholzer, which was a good move. So I do agree with that. And they did avoid paying Jabari Parker the $20 million he got from the Bulls for this season. So I don't know. I guess I feel like they're ranked higher than they should be because overall they didn't really change that roster all that much. And then I go back to guys like that they signed that ended up not even getting floor time. And like, you look at Dellavedova, how much did he get paid over 2 or 3 years? And he basically stole money from those guys after the season that he had with the Cavaliers. But still, I look at some of those signings and it's question marks.
Jordan, that's all fine and good. That's all fine and good. But all of those things that you're just talking about with Milwaukee are minute details compared to the one thing that matters when it comes to judging the Bucks front office now and in the future. Can they keep Giannis? Free agent in 2021, when he is still only going to be 25 years old. The only thing that matters when it comes to judging that Bucks front office is finding a way to keep that kid in Milwaukee, because he is a superstar, top 10 player in this league. And if he doesn't see a lot from them and doesn't get the help he needs to make a legit playoff team, if they don't make it into the next round of the playoffs this season compared to last season, he starts to get frustrated and looking around for greener pastures, and Milwaukee loses Giannis, then they will be heavily scrutinized, and rightfully so. All of the other signings, whether they were good signings or bad signings, matter a zero amount compared to keeping Giannis, because that matters a whole hell of a lot.
Well, doesn't keeping Giannis around mean that you have to put guys around him that'll help him win?
Yeah.
So that's my point here, is like, the front office signed all these guys that maybe they thought were going to play well around Giannis, and none of them have really panned out.
Well, that's like what I'm saying. I mean, like, they came in 15th in these rankings, smack dab in the middle of the NBA, and they were a playoff team that got bounced in the first round in the East last year. To me, like, that kind of makes sense. Like, some of the signings they've made have been good. Some of the signings they've made have been bad. But if you're judging the Bucks front office, and I see your point of saying, okay, well, like, they need to make lots of good signings to put lots of good guys around him so that they are good enough that he wants to stay there. I get that. I'm talking about present and future. I think their 15 ranking in this Bleacher Report column is pretty spot on, because they've had a mixed bag of good and bad. But moving forward, that 15 ranking is either going to jump up or dive, because they either managed to keep Giannis or they lost him.
That's true. And I guess I'm not giving him enough credit for moves like they made over the last couple of seasons, like trading Michael Carter Williams for Tony Snell, and Tony Snell actually being like a solid role player for them.
Turned into a decent player for them. Dude, and you know, they got Brooke Lopez for a tiny $3 million contract? Yep. Like, that's another solid signing.
And then I forgot about the Eric Bledsoe move that they made midseason last year too, and that was a good signing too, because they didn't really have a point guard to run their system. And so I'm curious about how that works out for them too. But like, that was another good move too, to bring in a guy that clearly didn't want to be with the Suns and then turn him around and try to put him next to a guy like Giannis. I think you're right though. Definitely their number one goal is to keep Giannis in Milwaukee for the long term or for the extended amount of his career. And if they don't do that, then that's a complete failure. But I think all these moves leading up to it are do count against and for the Bucks front office. But I think they did make a good move, and maybe this was their best move of the offseason, is replacing Joe Prunty and Jason Kidd as their coaches and bringing in Mike Budenholzer, who I told you I thought was the number one candidate outside of Dwayne Casey, was the number one candidate as far as coaching goes. So I'll be curious to see if Mike Budenholzer can get the best out of Giannis coming up this offseason. So maybe you're right. Maybe you are
right. Look, I can see them certainly taking a leap by a spot or two or maybe even three when it comes to the East's playoff seeds this year. I think consensus is that Boston's going to be one, maybe Toronto, if Kawhi's healthy, will be one. Philly's going to be there probably at three, and everybody's talking about a big second season from Oladipo and the Pacers, that maybe the Pacers are the four seed. I could see Milwaukee challenging Indy for that four seed, which, can you know, considering where they were last year, would be a step in the right direction. Then it would just be about getting out of that first round, which the Bucks with Giannis haven't been able to do.
So adequately ranked, Chicago Bulls number 24. You think so? Adequately ranked, not shouldn't be in the bottom five, but just outside of that bottom five?
Yeah, I think that's about fair.
I think so too. I think there's definitely some bad moves that you can stack up over the last two or three seasons, but there's also some good moves too, you know? And so we'll see. I think that's where I think a lot of the people that are ranking these front offices are taking, like you said, with the Bucks, you know, not looking at presently, but also looking at what future moves that they can make and how this team's going to end up turning out. I think the same thing goes for this Bulls team. It's a little bit unknown, but yeah, at least they're not in the bottom five of front offices going forward. And, you know, they're not as close to the Kings as maybe we thought that they were or Bulls fans wanted to think that they were. So yeah, I think adequately ranked at number 24 is probably a good slot for them. We got to take another short break here on Locked On Bulls, but when we come back, we're taking a couple voicemails before we get out of here on this Monday's episode. Stay right here with us at Locked On Bulls. Be back in 60 seconds.
Rinse the producer.
All right, back here on Locked On Bulls, finishing up the episode with a couple voicemails before we get out of here. Once again, you can drop us a voicemail or a text message, whichever one you prefer, 331-979-1369 to do that. So we're going to take a couple calls before we get out of here. This first one comes from Hayes in Philly.
Hey, guys, what's up? It's Hayes in Philly. I'm not a Fire Dar Pax guy. I'm also not C-Red Fred, right? I don't love him. I don't hate him. I think they probably get a little less credit than they deserve, but they're obviously nothing special, and I wish they were doing a much better job. But mainly, the thing that I want them to do more than anything is to do Moneyball, right? And a lot of people just understand that to be, you know, fat guys and get on base and home runs, but really what it is taking advantage of inefficiencies in the marketplace, or, in other words, it's buy low, sell high, right? If I could pick one thing for them to do, it would be buy low, sell high. And they were able to buy low on LaVine and Dunn and Jabari Parker. They got for nothing but $20 million in Ryan Storch money. That's great. So I don't know. I've come around on those signings. I think they did really well in the trade. I can't think of a better one. I tried really hard in 2K, and I could not make a better trade than the one they did. But anyway, that's where I'm at now. I'm all right with it. And if we're stuck with them, as long as they keep doing stuff like this, I think we'll be in a better place.
All right, appreciate the voicemail all the way out in Philly from Hayes. This is an interesting one, Matt, because I feel like we sort of agree in some sense with Hayes, or at least I do. The fact that the Bulls over, you know, the last 18 months or so are buying low and potentially selling high on some of these guys that they have as part of their quote-unquote young core. Him talking about buying low on LaVine, and, you know, for as much crap as the Bulls got in like the last 4 weeks about signing LaVine to 4 years, $78 million, you really look at that broken up over 4 years is $19.5 million per year. We were just laughing about the amount of money that John Wall and James Harden are going to get as players, you know, going into their 30s or late 30s. Like James Harden making $46 million, you compare that to 19.5 for a young guy in LaVine, and then you start to make the comparison. You're like, yeah, you know what? Maybe that LaVine deal isn't as bad as we thought it was. And then he said, too, like taking the cap space that you have short term, $20 million, and signing Jabari Parker for basically a 1 year tryout. And if you could turn that contract around and maybe build a trade from it, or, you know, potentially sell high on Jabari Parker if they don't feel like he can play the three here, but he's got some value for other teams. So ultimately, he's come around a little bit on the trades and as far as what this team makeup is going to be. And he's not super on the left side of Fire Garpax or the right side, that is, this Bulls team's going to be a championship contending team in 2020. So I feel like this is a good call because I feel like this is kind of where you and I sit. We are on the fence. We're right in the middle between the Fire Garpaxers and also the guys that think that this team is going to win in 2020.
Yeah, I mean, I understand where the caller's coming from as far as trying to look at it as a buy low, sell high situation with some of these guys, particularly Parker and LaVine. Parker, I don't buy it. If Parker has a great season, and you and I have voiced our skepticism about that, then the Bulls' options are picking him up on that second year with another 20 or re-signing him to a longer deal. If they do that, I don't think they're going to turn that into a sign and trade. I think they're going to keep him because they would like to keep Chicago native Jabari Parker on this roster if he does prove to be more of a plus than a minus and can score the ball and can put butts in the seats at the United Center. I see that this Bulls front office, from what we know about them, that would be their decision there. It would not be a buy low, sell high. It would be a bought low, keep Parker. With LaVine, I see it as maybe more of a possibility because obviously they were trying to use their leverage and weren't ready to pay him lots of money just because, and made him go out and get an offer sheet first. So as much as they said since the trade, when they got LaVine in town, that he's very much a part of the rebuild and we see him as the leader of our franchise, et cetera, et cetera. If Zach LaVine stays healthy, plays well, looks like the still one of the most athletic guys in the league who could jump out of the gym and proves himself to be like a 20 points per game scorer on a contract that Bulls fans this summer thought was pretty significantly an overpay, all of a sudden that 4 year 78 maybe doesn't look like as much of an overpay, especially in the latter stages of that LaVine contract where that cap's going to go up and then up again. Maybe all of a sudden that looks like a team-friendly deal and a team needs a scorer, and the Bulls, based on what they are hearing in offers, would be willing to, in that sense, buy low and sell high on LaVine. But with Parker, I think it's less likely.
See, I'm the opposite there. I think LaVine stays here long-term, no matter what, unless we're talking about a package for a guy like Anthony Davis or something like that. But, I mean, if you're looking as far as trades go and putting a centerpiece around a trade, I think Parker, if he has a decent year this year, can have some value on the market, like 23, 24 years old, had a pretty healthy, productive season.
He's already 24. He'll be 25 next summer.
Still, I think you could still put a package, pretty good package around a guy, and especially, too, like if you only pick
two ACL tears? You giving up any significant assets or trade package for a guy who has two ACL tears?
I know. I don't know if front offices would buy it, but if he has a full season this year where it looks like nothing would come back from those injuries, I think you look at a team that maybe has a star that wants to get out. That could be a possible package. And two, I don't know if they would re-sign him long-term or if a team would want him to re-sign long-term and then deal him. So that's kind of where I think you get sticky. But I feel like he still does have value if the Bulls are looking to go out and get a star. That would be a part of a package. For LaVine, too, I agree, too. I think it's buying low on people who don't necessarily feel like LaVine is going to be the player maybe we all hope he's going to be. I still buy high into LaVine, too. And I think I'm with Danny Parkins, too, who said the same thing, that he thinks LaVine is going to turn out to be a stud. I think so too. And look too, giving the Bulls credit on buying low on guys and then selling them high. How about Nico Mirotic? Nobody wanted Nico Mirotic last year, and the Bulls bought into him, bought low on him, and then traded him for a first-round pick after lighting it up for the Bulls here. So it looks like the Pelicans got a pretty solid deal out of that.
I mean, if you want to give the Bulls the credit for the buying low part of that, because do you count Nico as buying low? First-round draft pick, man.
I know, but $14 million he made last year. What was it, $12 or $14 million with an option for the second year? I think on a guy that we really thought was kind of unknown and inconsistent too. But then you look at the production that he had in 6 weeks here. And also, you got to give him credit last season too for the season that Anthony Davis had in the stretch of 6 weeks when he did join that team. Like, Anthony Davis was playing at the highest level possible when they added Nico Mirotic. He's like the perfect fit for them with the Pelicans. So I don't know. I guess I would say buying low on Nico.
I mean, I was just, you know, and we were talking in last week's episode about guys who didn't reach their potential and you wish they had. And that's kind of, I've always thought that way about Nico. Whereas, like, so I wasn't necessarily talking about buy low in the what did Nico earn dollars wise last season with the Bulls on that new contract, but just compared to what was expected of him, I don't think the Bulls necessarily in that sense bought low on Nico, if you understand what I'm saying.
No, I get that.
But your point is also well taken, and I would agree that especially before the Pelicans went on that tear at the end of the season and it looked like that pick might translate to a second lottery pick for the Bulls, they absolutely sold high, especially considering Nico's value last summer, which was zero on the trade, on the free agent market.
Another guy that they did buy low on but didn't sell high on, ended up walking for free, was David Nwaba.
David Nwaba. So buy low, get solid production, let go.
So the Bulls are good at buying low. I think Hayes is right here. The Bulls are really good at buying low on guys, but then it's a matter of can you flip them for something. They did that with Nico, didn't do that with David Nwaba, and I think that's a frustrating point too. I think I would be indifferent too as far as how this shakes out. And I think, again, it goes back to the unknown. On paper, this team looks pretty solid, but can this all translate to the court? I think that's what we're going to find out next season. And I hope it does, man. I hope they all stay healthy, and I hope it does turn into two guys that you did relatively buy low on, Jabari being a short-term deal and Levine 19.5 over 4 years per year. It doesn't look too terrible if they live up to at least the expectations that we think that they're going to. All right, last voicemail here comes from the 630. This is an interesting one, so I'm gonna play it.
Hey Jordan. Hey Matt, my name is Maharshi. So I've been listening to you guys' podcast for quite some time now, and I'm gonna throw a little bit of a crazy question out there. At least my friend Mike thinks it's crazy. He's actually left you guys a voicemail a couple times. Me and him debated this several times, and I just wanted to get you guys' thoughts. So I think that Jabari is slow as shit, and I don't think he has any chance at playing the three in this league. I also think he's slow at playing the four. I don't see him being able to guard, dominant players like LeBron whatsoever. But I also don't see Lowry being able to guard LeBron or any dominant fours. And so my question was, what if Lowry and Jabari would actually switch spots? And we had Lowry actually play the three and we had Jabari play the four. I know we've talked about, in the past on the podcast that Jabari would be a great four. And we've never, really looked into Lowry playing a three, although I think he could. I think that he's fast enough to play the three, and that's where me and my friend disagree on. So I just wanted to get your guys' thoughts on, it is a little out there, but I think that why not? I think Lowry's a lot faster than Jabari, and I think he can keep up with wings, and he can keep up with the threes.
Yeah, thanks for the call. Appreciate you checking in. I don't even know what you're talking about with this idea of swapping Jabari and Markkanen so Jabari can play the four, and you want to play Markkanen on the wing? You want to put your 7-footer at the three? I'm sorry, I know we've talked about Markkanen being a little bit better than advertised on the defensive end compared to what people were talking about him, what people were saying about him in the 2017 draft. And all of those draft analyses that were going on. But you're going to ask we're talking about how Parker can't guard the three, and that is a legitimate concern. Do you have more faith than Markkanen making all those switches, guarding all those guys out on the perimeter? Markkanen proved himself to be at least a decent one-on-one defender, and he stepped out to the perimeter and defended okay on the perimeter at times last season, and you hope he improves in that respect, but I'm sorry. I think the idea of switching Markkanen to the three is batshit crazy.
Yeah, that's like they haven't even entertained that idea in college. He's never done that before. So I don't know exactly where you're pulling this from. I'm with you too, Matt. Like I wouldn't even fathom the idea of putting your star big men at the wing position. Like, I get it. He's probably going to have to switch on to guys next year at times when Jabari Parker's, you know, if he gets beat past the basket, they're going to have to switch, or on pick and rolls, they're going to have to switch on some of those. But to like have him go up against guys like LeBron and KD, and think about all the wing players that are so good in this league. Does Markkanen have the feet to stay in front of guys like that? Like, that was our question mark last year. As far as coming out of the draft, we were like, does Markkanen have fast enough feet to switch on big men? And
I think, like, the caller here, to their credit, the problem is that, like, nobody the Bulls have right now on their roster can do that. So, but you're highlighting a problem and presenting a solution that is not a solution. You're just saying, well, this problem exists anyway, so, like, who the hell cares? If the Bulls don't have anybody on their roster who can guard at the three, why not play Markkanen in there? But I think you're just creating an additional problem as opposed to solving a different one.
Agreed. And why create a problem for the guy that you want to develop ultimately in Lowry rather than Parker? Like, Parker's right. Only going to be here realistically right now, looking at this contract, 1 year. Why change things up and complement what Parker's best at by diminishing what maybe Lowry should be doing in his second year? So it doesn't make any sense. I'll be honest with you. And I know David Fizdale has already talked about maybe using Kristaps at the wing position or possibly letting him bring the ball up. And as far as positional basketball goes, that's what Fizdale wants to do with Kristaps, but we're talking about a different player in Kristaps and Lowry.
Markkanen ain't bringing the ball up.
So,
okay?
Yeah, I just think it's a little ridiculous, and to fix what the negative knock on Parker playing the wing by switching him with your young big men just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And I think as far as switches go on defense next season, I think if Wendell's out there with Parker and Markkanen, you're going to see more switches at the three and the five than I think you're going to see with Markkanen and Parker side by side. Like, Wendell probably will have to step up on a switch, and Parker, while he's not as fast as we think he is, he can at least bang bodies down low, and hopefully he does decide to do that. But then it goes back to the big question. It's like, can he play defense at all? Will he play defense at all? And so a lot of question marks. I would not do that with Lowry Markkanen, though. Like, he's your cornerstone. He's what you want to develop either at the four or the five. And the wing, to even entertain that idea, I think is just stupid.
Yeah. Yeah, just because the Bulls don't have an ideal option at that spot doesn't mean that you should take your best, most exciting, promising young talent in Markkanen and shove him there when he doesn't naturally fit.
100%. And I agree. And like what I said last week, you don't have to fix everything in one season. You don't have to fix everything in one off season. You don't have to fill every gap in one off season. Like, so let's run it out there, see what happens. And if Parker doesn't work out at the wing, they're going to have some options. So, but I just think moving Lowry to the wing just doesn't make any sense at all. And they would never even entertain that. And Fred would never even entertain that idea either.
No, especially because they're talking already about, whether it's Fred or the front office, playing the small ball way that this league is trending. And that means not switching Markkanen from the four to the three, but from the four to the five. And that's something we've talked about. And I think you and I are a little skeptical right now about how ready Markkanen is to play real heavy minutes at the five right now, in only the second year of his career at the ripe age of 21. But that is where Markkanen would be trending to be a versatile multi-position player, is at the four and the five, not the three and the four.
Completely agree with you. Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. You can hit us up with your voicemails, your text messages, 331-979-1369. We do a full mailbag every single Wednesday, an hour of taking your calls, your questions, your text messages, and you hitting us up on social media as well. So if you want to be a part of the conversation, you want to hear yourself on the show, 331-979-1369 is the line to hit us up. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and follow us on Twitter, @JordanCMalley, @Bulls_Peck, and @LockedOnBulls. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern. Eastern at 9 a.m. Central Time. That's tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Make sure you're subscribed to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. We'll be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com.